Hi and welcome everyone, glad to start off this new episode of the Data Roll podcast. This is Stan, your favorite podcast host, and today we are discussing data culture and technologies together with Anne-Marie Roswell, Head of Business Intelligence and Platform Data at Pragmatic Solutions. So Anne-Marie, how about if you could tell us just a few words about yourself, your experience with data and iGaming, just to start.
So hi all podcast crew, I'm Anne-Marie Roswell. I am Head of Analytics, that's been nicely introduced, but Pragmatic Solutions. I have been doing BI, specifically to do with the iGaming industry now since 2015. Prior to that, I used to do a lot of renewable energy modeling, weather modeling and systems modeling. And I'm here to talk to you guys about BI.
Perfect. We're going to have a lot of questions for BI, data science reporting topics, etc. And one of the many topics that reoccur in the recent period, at least from discussing with different customers, is about the adoption of whatever we develop from a BI perspective. So we often say that data and analytics are so crucial for the modern businesses to prosper. And something that I have experienced and seen many times in different organizations is that you have a BI team. They deliver fantastic reports. They do a smashing job. They deliver procedures, dashboards. Fast forward half a year later, nobody uses them anymore. And everybody have completely forgotten that these existed in the first time. Did you already experience such situations in the past or heard from colleagues at different companies? What's your perspective on that?
Well, I think anybody who's worked in analytics has certainly had that that pain point, that pinch point where we've all done incredible bits of work that have been very time mentally intensive and time intensive to get the reports out. They have been pushed forward by the exec to get these reports out, and then within 2 or 3 weeks the reports are no longer being utilized. That is a real crusher for any team member who puts a lot of heart and soul in something. So I think one of the best ways one can maybe try and combat that is by making sure that when people are writing you the tickets for the dashboards, that if they are pressing for it to be something that is that they absolutely need, must be done now, then you have to start asking as the ticket owners and as head of BI, you have to start asking, well, what will you actually be doing with this? How frequently will you be doing it? What frequency of data? Can we give it to you in just a document in your email every week? Or do you actually need a dashboard with filters and everything else that goes behind it, which is including quite considerable costs, usually in infrastructure, when you start adding up reports after reports after reports into any form of cloud reporting facility. So yes, I think I definitely experienced that. And I would say there is no BI analyst on the planet that hasn't had that, where they've done a brilliant report and lo and behold, 3 months later, nobody even knows it exists.
Yeah, right. And the whole story would be actually to take care of the proper adoption. And here, when we speak also about the data culture in a broader sense, there's several terms that are revolving in this sphere. One of them is about the data discovery. So from your perspective, how do you actually understand what that data discovery is? How would you make sure that the company addresses the challenges that are related to that data discovery?
So number one, the data and part of the data discovery process for a BI team, especially when you're building a data warehouse bespoke for that company, has to be, well, what are the objectives of the company? What are the KPIs? What are we trying to sell, market, produce, or otherwise investigate with our data warehouse? So that always has to be the crux to what you're trying to do. You can't be making things super expansive and too big. You need to always make sure you're answering those original questions. So in terms of making sure the data is pertinent to the company, then that's always got to be in your mind and in your vision, quite frankly, all the way along, including whilst you're building reports. You have to be thinking, is this report actually doing and expressing the data in the way the company needs to see it? And obviously, different companies have got different ways that they ask different questions. Now, specifically, I've been working in iGaming recently since 2015. And I can say that within that sphere, there are many, many different ways within many different companies of recording the same series of statistics. And they all call them say, for example, gross gaming revenue, but some companies will have gross gaming revenue as X and others will have it as X plus Y plus Z and et cetera, et cetera. So it, you've got to make sure that you're always touching base with your particular client at a time and going, is this data pertinent to the company? And if it is pertinent to the company, then if they aren't adopting these dashboards or they are dropping them out of their line of sight, then you need to start asking, well, what were you trying to get out of this dashboard and how can we make it more insightful in a way that is actionable? Now, that's the real trick with BI is we can end up with lots and lots of decent dashboards, making the information actionable, and somebody can literally walk away from the marketing department and go, right, I know what that means and I know how to address that based on this data. That's actually a trick in its own right. And I think that's an undersold skill of a BI analyst that not too many BI analysts actually have. So they can build a nice graph and a table, but is it insightful in the way that the people need it to be? Maybe not.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps another underappreciated skill, you'll tell me what you think, is about the literacy. So actually making sure that our consumers and business users, when they actually interact with our sophisticated data platform, that they have the technical capabilities of using that tool and the sufficient knowledge to find out what are the different functionalities, features, and actually make use of them. So how do you think we could address this kind of topics, and what are the most important aspects that are related to the data literacy?
I mean, that's a really good question. So in terms of data literacy, that is the company's responsibility, not just BI, it's the company's responsibility from onboarding onwards. So when a new person comes into a company, they should be given a list of, say, abbreviations of what things mean, and maybe if they're calculated things, maybe even how they're calculated. These sort of things should be instilled, not just from BI, absolutely they will be pushed forward from BI. We will make sure everybody who uses our facilities, either through a Wikipedia pages or whatnot, we will make sure they understand how to use these things. But actually, that needs to be ingrained at a corporate or a company-wide level. So you need to be bringing people in, telling them those abbreviations, and then making sure that when they come to us, these things are not unknown. But of course, we end up with new people who come in who just want to just open up the data, have a look at what it's all about, and play around with some data. And in that regard, I would always say to any company I've been in, go for it. As long as the individual user has the access rights, because of course there needs to be permission to certain types of data, as long as they have adequate access rights and permissions and privileges with their position, then absolutely go ahead, knock yourself out with data. And as I've said before to a few people, and I think we've even discussed it before, we at a point that something becomes super useful, come back to BI and let us productionize it for you. Don't let reports just be hanging around in the middle of nowhere. That's data democracy that's gone a little bit too crazy. You know, we can no longer understand where our information is. So if you do end up building reports with your big exploration of data, come back to BI and let us productionize the ones that are really important to you.
True, true, true. And also just to kind of make a reference to teaching about the technology, do you have any, like with retrospect, some best practices that you would recommend, how to actually make sure that these users really learn how to use those tools?
Yeah, so number one, we usually have what I like to call driving lessons with BI. And so I will have my analysts conduct driving lessons, which is where we basically show people how to use the dashboards, what the filters do, what the sums do, and more importantly, what the sums don't do. And so we often find that people who aren't necessarily au fait with statistics and mathematics might not, and coding languages specifically, might not understand the groupings and summings over groups, etc. Now, this can end up being problematic when people start seeing data and they start making sums themselves and they go, well, it doesn't equal this, it doesn't equal that. So there is a point where you need to train your people. So first things first, usually when I'm in a company, one of the things we offer to do is start off with Excel courses, because I genuinely believe Excel is one of the best ways to introduce somebody to how to sum up some columns, how to understand how rows operate, how do columns operate, how does a grouping or a filtering function operate. And we start from something they're likely to be using in their everyday work, Excel, and then we can, as the person may wish to sign up to a later course, an intermediate or an advanced course. On those, we'll start addressing those issues from Excel in the medium of Power BI or maybe in the medium of SQL. So they start seeing progress and understanding. It's a great way to get people on board. It is time intensive from BI to run these classes. But I tend to find that when I do run those classes, we get a lot of appreciation and a lot of interest straight afterwards in people who want to know more about it. So I think there's genuinely amongst at least the gaming business, people want to be data literate. They want to be on point. They want their numbers to be on point. They don't want to get it wrong. So I think generally speaking, people are very willing to these training lessons, and it goes down a storm every time we do them, to be fair.
Okay, so glad that you have mentioned the magic word of democratization, because it's often mentioned just right next to data discovery and data literacy. There's the data democratization, how to actually nurture the citizen developers and build the community of practice. So what are your thoughts on what works actually the best for these cases?
Well, as I said before, I think it's always good to let people just go to town with the data that they have access to. But let's actually talk about data democratization a little bit more in its nuanced form, because it means different things to different people in the business. So as I described at the initial introduction, I've been working in iGaming for a good deal of years now. And different data points mean different things to different parts of the business. So let's just look at iGaming, for example. In iGaming, we'll end up with a business intelligence department, trading, casino department, marketing, acquisitions, affiliates, all of that sort of stuff, as well as ops and supporting, you know, CRM, fraud and risk, all that sort of stuff. Now, data democratization means different things to them, because the data that some teams need in order to do their job, discover their particular parts of their roles, are different from the data that other bits of the company will need. Now, and it can even be confusing to a point, especially within the iGaming industry, where the different departments will ask for the same data but grouped differently in different date time ranges because they mean different things to people. So let's go and just discuss what data democratization might look like differently between a CRM or an ops person versus, let's say, actually, no, let's do finance versus marketing and product. So marketing and product almost always want to know, when did the customer come to the website and do something? And that is defined in the iGaming industry by the stake date time. So that is the time they actually came to the website, they placed a bet, and they interacted with it. That's of interest to product, it's of interest to marketing, because they want to know, did the banners that they create generate any extra, say, footfall or traffic into the website? Or product will go, did this new feature we have put onto our website generate any more business? You know, is there an associated ROI on it? And so they always want to know stuff by stake date. But let's go to look at finance team. The finance team almost always inevitably want things settled or grouped by the settlement date. They don't care when the stake came in. They just want to know, what was the end all position of data? So if I give somebody a timeline and say that these products contain this much, say, profitability within a certain time frame, if I give that same data to the finance team, it's actually going to have different results because things will be grouped differently. And so part of the data democratization is a challenge for BI to make other departments understand why their reports are different from other people's reports, even though they apparently hold the same information at a cursory glance. Well, they don't. They're grouped differently by necessity of that particular team. And so again, data democratization is not just letting everybody understand what the stats are for their team. It's also sometimes letting them understand why they're different. Why are these reports different? Because if you don't explain why they're different, that can end up almost eating away at the confidence of people in the BI team, because they're like, oh, well, you produced a report that said X and they've produced the same report that said Y, without them necessarily knowing that the mechanics underneath it are different for very specific reasons, usually related to the particular output of the department at that time. So data democratization is an ongoing thing, and it means different things to different people. But I think BI just always need to have their door open effectively. You just need to be that person that people can come up into the office and say, hey, I don't understand this. and not make them feel silly or bad for asking these questions. And I think that's always, you know, a good part of being a good team member in BI is being approachable and willing to make people not feel stupid, because they do, a lot of people do feel intimidated by numbers. They do. So yeah, that's what we can do best, I guess, to try and export data democracy, is to understand that it's different things for different people by necessity, and try and tailor your each individual team's sort of journey a little bit more towards the type of data they're probably going to need for their department.
Okay, and let's say we've created or we have enabled our teams to deliver the tailor-made reports. Let's imagine you have many reports called the GGR report, for example. How to actually put in place some guardrails and policies, and where to strike that balance between strict control and being completely loose on the other extremity and allowing as much freedom to the users as possible? Where do you think that the sweet spot actually lies?
So again, we tend to, in all of the jobs I've been into, open up the data to the level that that particular person's job allows them to have access. Because obviously there's GDPR stuff, there's some data we just can't open up. But with those ones that do have access to data, as I say, we say go to town with it. But most importantly, if it becomes a process that your team hang off, it's something that without that report or without that particular piece of insight, you think your team are going to suffer, you should have come to BI before then and productionized it. Because our job is to make those reports, productionize them, and actually during that time that you're saying this is something we really, really need, we can analyze and look at your abstractions and your code behind something and say, well, is that actually doing what you think it's doing? Because sometimes it's not. Sometimes people come up with fancy reports, they produce fancy numbers, it looks great. And then you tell them, ah, but you can't add that thing up that particular way. And so rather than let them get entrenched in a process that's potentially wrong, it's a process that BI always go out to each individual department every single week saying, have you got anything new that you need productionizing? If there is, what is it? And do we, more importantly and more often, do we already have something that does it already? You just don't know where to look for it. That's quite often the case.
Yeah, true. It happens really, really often. And let's talk a little about technology. So today we've got at least a dozen of popular technologies for reporting and dashboards. And which is your favorite and why?
Oh, I'm unabashedly a Power BI girl. I think in terms of dashboarding, specifically the side of dashboarding, it's DAX is incredibly powerful. I like the ability that you have for cube functionality straight out of the reports. Tableau doesn't come close, in my opinion, and I've used Superset, QuickSight, lots of other stuff, and it just doesn't come close to the flexibility. And I think also, most importantly, the understandability of Power BI, because it is so close to Excel that people are so familiar with, the journey taking something from spreadsheet to using data online is not such a scary journey for people to make. So in terms of data visualization, without question, it's Power BI for me. In terms of technology beneath that, so if we're talking our data warehouses, I'm pretty agnostic, realistically, and I think we should be, because it's important to be able to stitch your data into any particular platform. You know, you shouldn't just hold yourself beholden onto AWS or GCP or SQL Server, Azure services, for example. You shouldn't just hold yourself available to one thing, because you'll potentially miss out being able to deliver data to other clients who don't sit on that platform.
Okay, perfect. Also, a statement that I've heard many times, dashboards are dead. Do you agree with this statement or quite the contrary?
It wounds my soul to hear that, truly. Dashboards are dead. No, they're not. They're not. I think it's a case of making sure that the right people in the business are engaged with a dashboard. And I think the ways to get dashboards actually engaged with is actually put them on, believe it or not, put them on TVs in the office, put them on big displays. It's a constant reminder to people that, there's data there. Oh, yes, I can go back and look at that. It's a case of constantly reminding people. And when you do your weekly reports for your board or your exec, you refer back to the particular report that it comes from with a nice link to re-engage them if they need to. People, I have heard this, dashboards are dead, from one person, and it broke my heart when I heard them say that. I've not experienced that. I have experienced, as we discussed at the very beginning, there's a lot of interest in some data to start off with, and that interest can wane. But with general reports, your reports, like, for example, just the examples on how the company work, how they're doing, how profitable they are, those sort of things, actually, there's no reason for those dashboards to be dead, because that is pertinent, very pertinent data, especially in the iGaming industry, as to exactly how that company is operating right now. And if those particular dashboards are dead, then my gosh, BI have a worry on their hands, because if the basics information is not being looked at, then is the, you'd almost argue at that point, is that a BI issue or is that a cultural problem within the organization? Because there are, and let's be clear, again, I've worked in places where they have declared themselves to be wonderfully data-driven until you give them the data, and then they don't listen to it because they decide that they know better than the data. And so at this point, you're not necessarily dealing with a, it's a BI issue, you're dealing with a, maybe it's a people issue further up the chain, and it's, maybe it's a cultural thing. And I think BI can sometimes get in the way of people's egos, because sometimes we can come up with results that don't favour a particular person's passion. And so people get passionate about their ideas. They spend a lot of time thinking about them. And when BI come in and go, sorry, buddy, doesn't look like that's going to work. It probably won't be profitable. Well, you know, that's putting dampers on people's dreams in some ways as part of their careers. And so BI can sometimes be the department that people don't like if it doesn't give them the results that they intrinsically want to hear. And that is actually a real discussion point, I think, is how do you get companies who declare themselves to be data literate, declare themselves to be data led, to actually be data led, agnostic, take your feelings out the picture, look at the bottom line. And that in its own right is more of a challenge, I think, of BI, is to get people to drop inner gut feelings and go with categorical evidence. Some people don't like doing that. It takes a certain almost scientific mindset to be able to turn around and go, I don't care about what I personally think. I do care about, however, what is true and false.
And believe the data, yeah?
And believe it, yeah.
Exactly. A final one from my side. I know that you have a lot of experience with data science and machine learning modeling, so sometimes referred today as AI. And what's your perspective when it comes to the evolution of this field in the last decade?
Well, in the last decade, I'm not going to lie, it's been very exciting. There's been a lot that's going on, and the improvements, at least within machine learning sphere, because I'm old school, we still call it machine learning where I'm from. So the machine learning sphere, we really have moved on leaps and bounds. You know, even the stuff that was once upon a time black box algorithms now can somewhat explain themselves. Now, in terms of the evolution, I think we are now in a lot stronger place with AI, machine learning, whatever you decide to call your particular flavor of algorithm. So we have a thing that back in the, say, mid-2015, 2016, something like that, when we were doing black box algorithms and it would say, computer tells you to spend $5 million on that marketing budget and then computer doesn't tell you why, was always a really hard sell to go to the execs and say, well, this machine learning algorithm says you should probably spend about $5 million on that. How are you feeling about that, guys? And when they turn around and go, why? You go, nah, computer says so. This sort of stuff doesn't really go down well, but now we have the ability to pick apart algorithms, find out the weighting. It's a lot less black box. And I think people are more comfortable with the idea of machine learning now. But let's be very clear, it is not a golden bullet. There's a lot of hype around AI. There's a lot of hype around machine learning. And anybody who's done the smallest amount of machine learning will realize that it will give you particularly stupid results if you ask it particularly stupid questions. And so how usable is this thing is purely down to the quality of the persons putting together the data sets that are needed to go into those algorithms in the first place. Is the data pertinent? And so for me, let's just hit supervised machine learning. I am all for supervised machine learning. There are human eyes on it. You can understand and you can explain to a board why something has happened. Unsupervised stuff, still not quite so sure on it. I've seen some particularly spurious results being put out by machine learning algorithms that were very uninsightful. It's very exciting future, but my honest position on it is one of healthy skepticism. Let's ignore the hype and get to the real deal about how it can help us calculate and run through a bunch of statistical measures super fast. That is the real useful function of machine learning. The rest of it just seems to be a lot of hype around things, and I think we have to be careful with that. We also have to be careful about how much free rein we give machine learning algorithms and how much trust we put in them too, because there's some tenuous points when you think about it of who has the culpability if something goes wrong. Let's just say we produce a marketing campaign and for some reason it just makes people have an addiction or something to one of the products that somebody might be marketing. Well, who was at fault? Was it the machine learning algorithm suggesting that particular type of advert, or was it the person who just went ahead and just said, yeah, go and do it? And so there becomes a tenuousness where we almost, I think, still need human beings on the end of machine learning algorithms in order for us to go, is this safe, usable, correct data? Because the computer is only as good as the person who puts the data in the first place, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I couldn't agree more. So that was my last question also for today. Thank you, Anne-Marie, for the compelling discussion.
Thank you very much for having me.
Today, we talked a little about various topics that are related to what we call the data culture and discussing about different technologies and approaches. Thanks again. That's going to be it for today. Time to sign off. So remember, keep rolling with the data.
Ciao, ciao.